Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride.
Frankin' Chicken.
He's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken. Bop, bop. Frankin' Chicken.
He's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken.
Bop, bop.
Frankin' Chicken.
He's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken. Bop, bop. Frankin' Chicken.
He's a bad mother clucker.
Frankin' Chicken. Bop, bop.
The evil of the Franken chicken spreads across the nation, especially today, because it's Friday.
It's Friday,
gotta get down on Friday. And today, WWE's giant Irishman Sheamus is on the show. What a cool guy. I went over to his house. He lives about 10 minutes away from me, which is crazy. I didn't even know that. Had a chance to hang out with him and talk shop. Talk about his big return. Talk about his big heel persona. His big hair. Talk all about what led him back to the WWE, what led him there in the first place. His early years, talking about Bono and talking about he's an IT guy. He's like a really smart dude. So many cool things coming up with Sheamus, as Del Rio used to call him. I'm working with Sheamus tonight. Big, tough, hard-hitting Irishman. Going to be on the show today. I believe it's his podcast debut. And you can say, oh, he did Shecky McGee's podcast. I'm talking about the big guns. And, you know, it seems like everybody's got a podcast nowadays, but you know which ones are the big ones. And Sheamus has never done another podcast that I know of, and I'm excited to have him on the show today. Because it's been kind of a rough week for old Y2J here. I mean, hopefully you enjoyed the Stephanie Jericho Live with Chris Jericho. We'll talk more about that next week. But had a great time with it. Had a great time doing Live with Chris Jericho. Probably not going to be doing any more for a little while. I have some big announcements. We'll help you to understand the reason for that. And I will announce those upcoming. Maybe even as soon as this weekend. Maybe even tomorrow. Just stick around and see. But the week started kind of crappy. Fozzy had a show in Atlanta last Friday night, which was cool. And then let me go through this. Myself and Jeff and Billy and Frank flew from Atlanta to Jacksonville, and Rich was supposed to join us, but the person that was going to drive the trailer with all of our gear into it decided not to show up, which is what happens a lot of times in showbiz. So Rich was forced to drive the trailer himself. Now, Rich is a longtime veteran, not a big deal. It was a six-hour drive. He left pretty much after the show. They stopped at a truck stop, grabbed a couple hours sleep, kept on driving, got into Jacksonville, went to the hotel, slept a little bit longer. So it was cool. Meanwhile, me and the rest of the guys got like 2 hours sleep, got up early, flew to Jacksonville. There you go. So when I get there, I got to do some press. We got there at about noon, and we were supposed to go on at 2:30. So I had to do some press, and I had to kind of, get everything situated. The guys go, they take the gear out. Because we're just doing like a one-shot thing, we don't really have our crew. We don't have a bus. We don't have anything. It's just a one-shot. So the guys are unloading the trailer, and there's kind of local roadies that help out for the festival. This is a big festival in Jacksonville called Welcome to Rockville. Now, we played it last year, okay? And the guys that promote all the festivals across the states, if you play at a festival, you usually don't get invited back the very next year. It's just kind of protocol. And we played a lot of festivals last year, Carolina Rebellion, Rock on the Range, 98 Rock Fest, blah, 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 blah. But the one festival that invited us back was Welcome to Rockville, which is weird because the guys that promote all the other festivals promote Rockville. And he said, we can't have you back because you played last year, but you can play Rockville again. Well, you just threw your own theory out of the water, basically saying that we don't book bands 2 years in a row, but we'll book you in one of our shows. So anyways, it's our one big festival appearance in the States this summer, and it's double of what it was last year. I mean, this is packed. I saw as soon as I got there at noon, the place was full, and it's a big giant field in downtown Jacksonville, a place called Metro Park. And I think it holds about 30,000 people. I believe last year had about 1920. This year it's sold out and people are there early. And that's one of the cool things. There's a lot of festivals in Europe in the summertime. As a matter of fact, when you're in a band, you call it festival season because that means that you go to Europe for 2 weeks or 3 weeks and you do all the festivals over there. So now they're taking that same concept and moving it over to the States, which is amazing because now all the bands don't have to go overseas and be away from home for so long. You can just go kind of tour throughout the month of May or June or whatever it may be and do all the festivals over in your own country, which is killer. So it's good that people as well are starting to show up early because that's something that's really amazing about, Download, for example, in the UK. If you're playing at noon, like last year we played the main stage at noon and there's 40,000 people there. People come to see your band, okay? So that was really, really cool. And same thing was happening at Welcome to Rockville. We were on fairly early, but there was a lot of people there. People were chanting Fozzy in between bands. Had a lot of people, like fellow band members, press, fans on Twitter were excited to see your set. We're so excited. We came to see Fozzy and this, that, and the other thing. So it's set up. You know, it's a softball waiting to be hit right off the tee. So we're feeling good, man. You know, the night before in Atlanta, it was a good crowd, but it wasn't super, super huge or super crazy. But that's okay because the next day in Jacksonville, it's going to be one of those nights, right? One of those days where you just play a killer show and people just go nuts. And you make a lot of new fans at a show like that because if you're playing a festival, a band like us, let's say 30% of the crowd knows who we are. That's enough to get the ball rolling, get people chanting Fozzy, get people into it, get people start having fun, and that becomes very infectious. So the other 70% that might have never heard Fozzy before, or maybe there's more, maybe it's 50%, I don't know. But there's always a contingent that have never heard your band or seen your band. Maybe they've heard of us, but haven't heard the specific tunes and seen us live. And when we play live, we're made for a big stage. Anybody that's seen Fozzy knows, like, we're Van Halen in 1970. We make sure people have a great time. That's our thing. We don't have pyro shooting off the drummer's, ball bag. We don't have a dragon flying from the ceiling. We are the show. We put on a very entertaining, energetic, crowd participation-esque show. And when people are at a festival and they're having drinks and they want to have a good time, we're your perfect band. Not a lot of mosh pits at a Fozzy gig, but a lot of people jumping up and down and chanting, hey, 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 1, 2, 3, and chanting Fozzy and showing their boobs, whether they're girls or guys. We don't care. The more boobs, the better, right? So we are looking forward to this set, okay? So everything gets set up, and we're in. You get a little trailer. Everybody gets trailers, all the bands. So we're getting ready. And now, before a show, and this is the same with wrestling, you put on your gear. You put on your suit of armor, and you get ready. Okay, so if it's wrestling, you put on your tights and your boots, and then you're ready to rock. With Fozzy, I got stage wear. I put on my black pants with the studs and silver on it. I was going to wear like the dirty white dress shirt that I took outside into the underneath the tree and took some actual soil and rubbed it on the dress shirt to get it all dirty looking. And then I have this kind of black sequin tie. I put that on. You roll the sleeves up. It's looking pretty cool. And because it's in the daytime, I'm not going to wear a lighted jacket, but I got another all stud gold and silver. It looks killer. Okay. So I put the stuff on. And I go walk around for one last, I don't know what I was doing. I had to go talk to somebody or I had to go find something out. I know what it was. I was talking to the head of our record company, Century Media, was there to come see Fozzy specifically. And it's always good when the head of your company's there because, you know, you got somebody to impress. You got to put on a show and make sure that your boss digs it. So I went to talk to him for a second. As I'm walking back to the trailer, it starts spitting out. You know, there's a couple, you know, little sprinkles of water, you know, drops of rain. And I'm like, well, hopefully this will go away because the rumor was that it was supposed to rain. But I'm like, well, if it's going to rain, it'll probably rain later on in the day because it wasn't like cloudy or anything like that. It was, you know, a few, you know, little scattered dark clouds, but whatever. So it starts spitting. I go in the trailer. I put on my shoes. I put on my shirt. Like now I'm in rock mode and I'm almost ready to start warming up. And I look outside and it's raining. And it's not just raining, like it's pouring rain. I open, you know, sometimes when it's raining, you open the door and it's got that whoosh. That's what it sounds like. That's what it was like. Guys come running back in the trailer. Jeff comes running in. He's got some friends with him. You know, everybody's scattered. Rich went back to the van and Frank's in there. And it's like, what's going on? And I had, funny thing is I had just gotten a tweet about 3 minutes before that that said, they're not letting any more people into the festival. Don't they know who's on? In like 20 minutes. And this is us. Like we're up 20 minutes. The band before us had just finished. Now it's changeover. 2:30. It's Fozzy. Okay. And now it's about 2:10. And I had just read that they're not letting any more people into the festival. I'm like, oh, that's weird. I wonder why. And then 5 minutes later, I know why. Because it's a torrential downpour. So now there's like the two people from a record company, the four members of Fozzy, besides Rich, who's somewhere else. Jeff had brought two friends, and there was a couple of people. So there's like 10 people in this trailer. That probably holds about 10 people. But it's just coming down. And the worst feeling in the world is they've evacuated the field. All right. So there's nobody out there. Everybody had to go get evacuated off the field and stand under an overpass that was close to the field. So we know, like we're on in like 10 minutes and it's that sinking, horrible feeling. Like there's no way if the heavens open up now and the sun starts shining, maybe we can still go and set up our gear because they had to take everything off the stage and you can't have any electronics on stage and there's no fans. There's 20,000 people standing under a freaking overpass, you know, half a mile down the road. So it's like, we're screwed. You know, we're screwed. I mean, maybe if it stops now, we might still get to play for like 10 minutes, right? And of course, it keeps going and going and going. And finally, one of the festival site workers comes in and says, listen, they want everybody to go inside and stand inside this TV studio. There's like a brick building TV studio on site because there's a tornado warning and we don't want anybody in the trailers. And I'm like, okay, now we're screwed. Torrential downpour, evacuation, lightning, and tornado warning. Okay. And of course, you know, when there's a tornado warning, what happens? It hits the trailer parks and we're in a trailer. So you just see the time tick away and suddenly it's 3 o'clock and then it's 3:30. Now I'm looking at the schedule to see how many bands are getting canceled. Because now, obviously, I feel bad for the crowd. I feel bad for the fans because a lot of people have been waiting for like months to come to Welcome to Rockville. A lot of people have been waiting for months to see Fozzy. We've been waiting to play it, but now we're canceled. And I'm like, I hope we're not the only sad sack band that gets canceled. You know, like I don't want the festival to get canceled. I want the kids to see as many bands as they can. But man, I hope there's other bands that get canceled too. And, you know, I think Upon a Burning Body got canceled and Exodus got canceled and maybe Of Mice and Men. But it wasn't that long. It was only about a 2 hour time frame. And then as soon as it cleared up for good. It was great. Okay, I shouldn't say for good. It cleared up perfectly. Queensryche was supposed to get on. They went on right away. They played their set. Periphery played their set. Like everybody's now back on track. Hailstorm, everybody's happy. So I had press all day long. Of course, that all gets canceled. For that 3 hour time, I missed my gig. I missed the FYE signing where you sell albums because everybody waits in line to get your signature. And I missed a bunch of press. But finally, the rain goes away, and it's like you got another signing at the Marshall booth. I go to the Marshall booth. It's a long, long queue to do the Fozzie signing, which is just me now because everybody else is packing up the gear, and it just became a whole cluster, you know? So I'm signing for this big, long line at the Marshall tent, Marshall Amplifiers. Testament is playing. And I've signed for probably, I don't know, 100 people, and there's 100 more, if not more, 200 more, let's say. And guess what? Here comes the tornado warnings again, and everybody gets evacuated. Testament set gets cut, and my signing gets cut. So I couldn't buy any luck. The gig got canceled. The signing got canceled. It just sucked because as soon as I was walking over to that signing, and I see people going nuts for Testament, I'm like, that should have been us. You know, we should have had those cheers. You know, people were chanting Fozzie, Fozzie after the band before it's finished, and just a really poopy feeling. I think, you know, 6 out of the 50 bands got canceled, and we were one of those 6. So that was really lame. And then, you know, later on this week, I found out that there's this gig I've been working on for a year, and I found out I didn't get it. I was the second choice. And this thing was a career maker, like a game changer of all game changers. This was a huge, huge gig. And I got all the way to I feel like I'm in a boxing match with Floyd Mayweather, and we go the distance and I lose by decision. That's exactly how I feel right now. So, you know, I mean, it's one of those things sometimes, and I'll let you know what it is when the time is right, but I got to keep it secret for now, probably not for too long. But, you know, and that's life, man. I mean, sometimes you think you got a shoe in. You think you got everything lined up and you're perfect for something or whatever it may be, and it just falls apart and you end up with nothing. So the only thing you can do is just pick yourself up, brush yourself off, get back on that horse and ride it into the ground. That's the only thing you can do. You can sit there and be miserable, and that's kind of the initial thought process, but shake it off, man. Give yourself that day to feel bad, be depressed, and then wake up the next day and realize there's nothing you can do about it. Because this audition that I had, first of all, you can't fight God with the rainstorm at the Fozzie gig. There's nothing I can do. And the gig that I didn't get, the audition that I had, was killer. It was the best audition I could have done. I couldn't have done better. And it just wasn't exactly what they were looking for. I gave them 99 out of 100, and the other person gave them 100 out of 100. So, and a lot of times that's subjective. You know, I went left, and maybe the other guy went right, and maybe they wanted right instead of left. So, anyways, point being, if you have confidence in yourself, as everybody should, you believe in yourself, as everybody should, you just got to keep on rolling, man. You know, like I said, that's part of life. And you can't let yourself get too worked up or feel too bad about it, because there's certain things that are just literally out of your control. Okay? So when those things happen, you can't freak out. You just got to keep on moving, stay positive, stay cool, and know that there's always other things. You know, close door number one, and something else comes behind door number two. And sometimes you don't understand that, and sometimes you don't know what that might be. But I'll tell you what, if you live in the past and live with regret or live with wondering what if, you will drive yourself crazy. Okay, so be cool, and remember, there's certain things that are just out of your control. You just jump right back up, you get back in the fight. Don't let the bastards get you down, and keep on rolling, all right? Okay, that's what I got to say, all right? Give me a yeah, boy, out there. I said, give me a yeah, boy. All right. I like these little rants that I go on from time to time. They make me smile. Keep speaking of making me smile, this is something that's good, is that my new Comedy Central web series, Nothing to Report, has now done over 750,000 views, still growing. I want you to help me get this over 1 million views by the end of next week. If you haven't checked it out, please go to YouTube. Type in Nothing to Report. There's 6 episodes. They're about 5 minutes each. I guarantee you're going to laugh at it, okay? You can go to ComedyCentral.com as well. The more people who watch, The more people who check this out, the better chance we have to get this thing picked up as a series or to do more web episodes, all right? If you liked it, watch it again. My favorite episodes are Emotional Scars. I'm really getting into Partners and really getting into Captain Ed. Those are my three favorites right now. Go check those out, all right? But they're all good. There's only six episodes. I guarantee you'll laugh out loud if you check it out, okay? Team Tiger Awesome, Nick Mundy, Clint Gage, Michael Truly, they were on Talk is Jericho a few weeks ago. They created, directed, starred in the series, and they're hilarious guys. I want to do more work with them, man. So go watch Nothing to Report and go check out the Team Tiger Awesome episode of Talk is Jericho, okay? Do it, and go do it right now. Please, I'm begging you. Please, I'm down on my knees, baby. I'm down on my knees. I need your help to make this series a hit. All right. Love talking to Steph Nukeman tonight, man. She's super, super fun. Had a great conversation. Hope you enjoyed it. Like I said, we'll talk more about that. We'll talk more to Sheamus. He's on the way for his podcast debut. We did it at his house, so I wanted to look good. You know, I wore a brand new suit, brand new set of wellies because it was raining. I love saying the word wellies. They're rubber boots in English, in England.
This is Talk is Jericho.
All right, man. I am here at the, it's very nice, almost like a mansion. This would be a mansion if we were in Ireland.
Jesus, yeah. I don't know.
The House of Sheamus. Yeah, man. So, and it's good to talk to you. I can't believe you live basically right down the street from my house.
10 minutes, man. I didn't even know.
I didn't know it either. Crazy. I punched it into my GPS and I was like, that Winn-Dixie is where I grocery shop. You
it's depressing in there. That's the only thing about that supermarket. I walk in there, I feel like I'm walking into a morgue. You know what I mean? It's pretty bad. But it's crazy, yeah. Like, I love it out here. It's we're about 20 minutes outside Tampa. And it's just kind of very country. And it's very, you know, it's very quiet. And especially when you come off the road, I like that feeling of getting home and just kind of just getting away from
kind of
everything.
Being off the beaten path, right?
Definitely.
Because that's the thing. Like, and I think sometimes people maybe don't realize, like, when we're on the road, like, from the moment you go out of your house to go to the airport, you're on. Because if someone recognizes you or someone says, hey, it's Sheamus, and you can't take a picture, and then you got to go to work, and then you're working the whole time. You know, there's 6 hours before the show that you got to get ready. So when you come home, man, I just like to just detach and don't really do much of anything, you know?
No, I totally agree. When you go on the road, it's like, you know, you get in the car, that's it. As soon as you hit the airport, as soon as you hit Veterans Expressway, mm-hmm. You're on the road. Like, and even when you're traveling, like, from airports and gyms and, you know, there's fans everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's great to be able to interact with them and talk to them. But as I said, you're always on. And then most of the time, a lot of the guys are traveling with other lads, other guys. They have their group of guys to hang out with. Mm-hmm. So you're always around somebody, whether it's the hotels, right, whether you're in the car. And it just, to me, this is perfect. Just to, like, you need those couple of days just to kind of unwind and get back to normality, like, because mm-hmm. that's really it's a good way to separate everything from work. And
do you still travel life with other guys, or do you travel on your own?
Since I came back, I've kind of been traveling on my own. The other day I traveled with Fandango and Bray Wyatt, you know. Mm-hmm. So they're the good group of lads. I've traveled with Titus before in the past, and then of course before then I traveled with Drew McIntyre and Jinder. Mm-hmm. Drew I've known for many, many years, one of my best mate. No, it's always good. It's good to have a good group of guys you hang out when you like. But sometimes as well, I like the idea of just traveling on my own.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a good way of unwinding.
I'm the same way. Cause, I mean, I went from traveling from six guys in a minivan to five to four to three to two. And sometimes, you know, when you're by yourself, it's so much easier. You don't have to worry about, like, hey, if I want to go to the gym at 11 in the morning, or if I want to go at 2 in the afternoon, or maybe I don't want to go today. Yeah. You don't have to worry about the guy, like, what time do you want to eat? What time do you want to go to the gym? Or what do you want to listen to on the radio? Like, it does give you a little peace of mind to have that kind of sanctuary on your own.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. We just came back from the European trip, too. And, like, there's that sort of feeling. It's great fun. You get to see a lot of Europe. You get to perform in front of some amazing fans. And it's also special for me when I go back to Ireland. But at the time, you still have to bus at a certain time. There's a schedule mm-hmm. you have to adhere to. And when you're on the road, it's good not to have to, I kind of find it's good to, you know, you wait if you don't get to, if you sleep late, or you, like, it takes until 3 in the morning to get to sleep. and some lads want to train 8 a.m, you know, you need to get your rest and you need to get your head together. So there's definitely an advantage of traveling on your own. But, you know, that's the lifestyle. I mean, I did IT for years. I worked in Ireland, and then I moved over to Canary Wharf.
IT computer fixing?
Computer fixing or computer breaking, depending on what way
that's
you're
what IT
at.
Is. Like, what does that stand for?
Information technology.
Really?
It's a very vague, IT is a very vague word. Like it's funny, you know, when my dad works in security IT in Dublin, and when I was in college, I did human resource management, and it was something I got thrown into by my career guidance teacher. I had no idea what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I was very much of a dreamer, you know, and I always dreamed, like, to me, I always wanted to be in the WWE. Now, people say it all the time, and it becomes very cliche, and mm-hmm. but generally, legitimately, it's all I wanted to do. But, you know, even in college, I had no interest in any of these, like, there's a lot of different courses going on in Trinity and DCU. I never really, like, for me, I kind of took, it's it probably, you know, stopped me a little bit, because sometimes when you have a goal, you reach for that goal. Okay, I want to get this to go to this college. But, like, I never really had anything I want to do. And career guidance teacher said, oh, you're good with people. Let's just do human resource management. Well, the great thing was, when I did human resource management, that my class was, like, I think 95% girls and 5% guys. So I was like, this is great. This is fair play. I'm thinking, like, you know, this my career guidance teacher has my back. You know, she's my wingman, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it came, you know, it didn't really work out. I went into IT through my dad. And again, IT is very vague. Like, people who, like, fix printers or, like, replace paper and printer.
That would be IT.
I'm IT, yeah. Or, you know what I mean? Or someone who, like, looks after high-end networks and security systems for banks and stuff. They're IT. So it was a funny stage, like, because IT was really starting to take off when I left college. And everybody was IT. It was just a way of just, like, sounding like, you know what I mean?
It's like going to college for business.
Yeah, business. Yeah, exactly.
I got my degree in business. What does that mean? Well, it could be anything.
Such a vague area.
That's so funny, IT, because I know that Wade Barrett, I had him on the show, and he was like some kind of a
marine biologist.
Is that what he was? Like a financial office guy or something? Like, all you guys had, like, real jobs. What's funny, because you hear a lot of times guys from the UK, they start wrestling when they're 14 or 15.
Yeah.
But you guys actually have, like, brains.
Yeah, there's brains in there somewhere, Chris. I think.
So can you still fix, like, what was your specialty, fixing computers? Or
I started off fixing computers. I started off them just building them, like, putting them together. And then I moved on to, like, kind of network stuff, like office stuff, like putting everyone on a network and Active Directory, Windows 2000. It's all, like, sounds like jibber jabber. But, you know, I got into it, but my problem was, I mean, who has a passion for IT? I mean, I'm sure there's people out there who have a passion.
Yeah, I want to be IT, man.
I want to be IT, man. You know what I mean? Like, but like, it's just, I didn't never really had that type of passion for what it was. To me, it was just a job. Mm-hmm. So I got to a certain level. I worked for a really good company called the Hartford Life. They moved over there. I worked with some great people. Pat Quinn was my boss, and Deb Berg. They were the most understanding people ever. It was funny because I started wrestling for Irish Whip Wrestling. That's really how I got back into wrestling in Ireland, because I started off, I met Bret Hart in 2002. I met him in Lily's nightclub.
In Dublin?
In Dublin,
because you were working there, right?
Yeah. I had three jobs at one stage, because I've always been, like, I've worked since I was about 12, 13. I worked in a garage next to my house. So my dad's always been adamant about making my own money. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I'm hating him for that statement, because I was just like, you bastard, do you know what I mean? You just don't want to give me any bleeding money. Overall, no, it was a great idea, because he made me realize the value of money at an early age. And I wanted to buy a house. Like, house property in Ireland was through the roof when I was about 18, 19. I'm actually older than that, sorry. So I had three jobs. I always like working. I like working the door. Lily's, I worked in a place called Purcell's. I think you've been in there many times.
Yeah, so we played a couple shows there, and in Dublin, and I'd go in there, oh, Seamus, Stephen.
Yeah.
Stephen Farrelly used to work here. I'm like, who the hell is Stephen Farrelly? And like, oh, Seamus. Oh, yeah, Seamus used to work here. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great crack years ago. There was tree bars. Downstairs you have the Rock Bar, which my dad actually used to go to as a teenager with my mom. And
what's the place called? Brussels.
Brussels, yeah.
Is that where the statue of Phil Lynott is?
Or Phil Lynott, yeah, right.
I was just there a couple, last tour we were there about 6 months ago or so.
Honestly, it's one of the best bars in Dublin.
Yeah, it's a great place. Like, yeah. So there's a rock bar.
Downstairs is a rock bar. The other side's kind of like a more trendy bar. So there's two bars downstairs. And upstairs is this, like... It's the Monday to Sunday night drinkers who go there all the time.
AKA 7 days a week.
Exactly.
But that's a big place, like, for rock guys to go there. Like, everybody who plays, if you're from America or you want to go to Brazil's to see the statue. Did you used to see a lot of the guys down there at all?
Yeah, I saw like Slayer would come in all the time.
Yeah.
Megadeth. The funniest thing was, the weirdest night I had, I was there one night. It was like Monday night. So... I did Brussels from 6 to 12 on Monday, so I finished work and I drive in. And just the way it was, just, you know, I like to have a bit extra money in my pocket, and, you know, and I like working because I like socializing with people, you know. Mm. And I was training, so I wasn't really interested in drinking that much. But we used to call Monday the suicide shift, because from 6 o'clock when town got dead, it was like the 3 hours, literally... tumbleweeds coming down the street, right? And me and the guy called Niall would be standing there, and our heads would be wrecked, like, just bored out of your mind, you know. Right. It was a great thing, because it just made me realize, listen, I can't be doing, you know. Mm, I mean,
yeah, if I've ever not what I want to do for my life.
Exactly, you know. But I got on, but, like, I remember we closed up and I opened the door, and it's a small fella, bald head with his big bushy beard, and he goes, "Can I come in?" He had a bit of American accent. "Can I come in?" I says, no, sorry, mate, we're closed, you know. And I looked down and I was like, "I know you, you know." And he's just looking at me like, he was like, he's probably about, like, I don't know. He wasn't that tall at all. But Matthew McConaughey was coming in. He just did that, he was filming that Reign of Fire movie.
Oh, about the dragons.
I think they were filming at Wicklow. So he was coming in for a pint. So, you know, it was just, that's the type of thing, like, Brussels, you know, everybody was in town.
Yeah, that's the place to go if you're in Dublin, right? That's the place you want to be, right?
It's funny. I couldn't believe how short he was, though.
Well, that's it's funny when
you. Yeah, I was like, "What? Where's the rest of you gone, mate?"
Because those guys are the big hero leading men,
the jacked up guy, you know, on TV.
Exactly. So it's funny, like, so when you're working at, like, in Dublin, of course, the big thing is like, okay, well, who's the big fan? Like, U2, they're from Ireland. Mm. Do you ever see, like, U2 wandering around?
Well, I worked in Lily's too, and Bono would always come in there.
Oh yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
So he'd be always in.
It was. Did you talk to him at all?
Yeah, you know what, Bono gets a bad rap, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, comments like, "Oh, Bono thinks he's Jesus," or "he thinks he's God," and all this. But I never, like, the thing about Liddy's was, or it, well, was, and it still is, it's still going, like, I still drop in there when I'm home, is that, like, there was a lot of pretenders in there. It made me realize as well a lot of things, like, about people. Like, I met some really good people in there, like, one of my best mates, between him and Drew, is Ray Sr., and, like, I met some good people, but I also met some, like, seriously phonies, man. Like, just mm-hmm. people, like, who just people who are pretty worthless. Like, people who there was no substance to. You can weed them out, you know. Like, they're just users or whatever it is, or socialites. They just breeze past you, you know what I mean? Barely say hello once they got what they knew you.
Once they got the door.
Or in the door, exactly. But Bono... Man, he would walk in and he would go and shake the hand of the fella sweeping the lane, or picking up the glass, or everybody. He'd just go around and say hello to everybody. He made his intention to go around and say, and that was pretty, that's classy. You know,
absolutely.
What I mean? Especially for who he is and what he's achieved. But it was funny, I used to have a friend of mine, a lot of mates in Dublin, like, they're a bit mad, right? And one in particular who's half Spanish, half Irish, just to me.
That's terrible.
Should never be mixed again after looking at this guy. But he'd always come in. I'd always bring the lads in because it'd entertain me. Because if I couldn't go out with them, I'd bring them into Liddy's, you know. So I'd get them in and all. And there was girl Valerie Rowe was on the door. She was, she was like the headmistress of the club, you know. Mm-hmm. And to get past her she used to have mood swings, like she wouldn't let your mates in, or she would. It was just that kind of aura of this club, you know. And Ger O'Reilly, of course, who's still very good friends with, like, he liked a drink or two. But one time I met him in the members bar, and I guess he went on this rampage from watching, he'd been watching Jackass mm-hmm. and Party Boy. So he felt like he was in Greece for 2 weeks, and he felt like he enjoyed imitating Party Boy, which is where he would basically drop down to his underpants and be start jumping
just
around.
Just dance, yeah.
So he brought him to the knees a couple of weeks after he gets back from this. So of course, I don't know anything about it. So then we go in the members bar. Bono's near the table. So I'm like, Ron, enjoy yourself. Just, you know, behave. He's like, oh, yeah, no problem. I'll behave. All of a sudden, one of the lads grabs my shoulder and goes, oh, Steve, oh, Jerry's in there. I said, oh, no, yeah. He goes, no. You better get him. I look over. Right behind Bono, Jerry O'Reilly is doing the Party Boy trick, stripping off his top, pulling off his pants down to, all he's got is a pair of like white Calvin Klein jockeys right behind Bono's head. I ran in, grabbed him with his scruffed neck, dragged him out. I nearly battered him. It was very, very funny.
You can't Party Boy behind Bono. No. So how is it for you? Like you mentioned, you just did the European tour and you guys had a Dublin show. How is it when you go back there now as, you know, superstar world, your former world champion, Sheamus, you know?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, Chris, because like, you know, it goes back to being the O2. I remember the first show I saw, the first live show I saw, my ma brought me. It was the main event was Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase against the British Bulldog.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was brilliant. Barbarian was on the show. There was Shawn Michaels was on the show. Even the Berserker was on the show. So you know, it was great. And the Point Depot, it's a very famous building in Dublin, and I went for a couple of tryouts there before I went to TVs. And I remember I went in there. The first time I went in there, I had no idea what I was doing, mate. I'd been wrestling Irish Whip Wrestling. We hadn't been training properly.
That's a great name, by the way.
Irish Whip Wrestling, yeah. It was funny because Simon Rochford, who was the promoter, who owned the company, was just like, when he did it, it was a tribute to Dan O'Mahony and the Irish Whip move, you know?
It was like, Dan O'Mahony's like one of the most famous Irish wrestlers, right? Yeah. Of all time, yeah.
And he was like thinking of a tribute, but what happened was, every time we mentioned the name Irish Whip Wrestling, people were thinking it was some sort of fetish. Fetish. Whips and chains and leather gear, you know? But I went in there with a couple of guys the first time, disaster. Like, it really was disaster. I really like, got our egos kicked. And then I went back on my own again. It was November. It was actually like a week after Eddie passed away. Mm-hmm. And I went in and, I mean, obviously the mood was so down, you know, because it was a SmackDown group I was on too, and Eddie was obviously part of that group. So I met Finlay.
Yeah, that's right, because there was a European tour. Right, a lot after. Of guys couldn't even go to his funeral because they had to leave to go overseas.
Yeah.
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 So you met Finlay.
So I met a lot of the guys, but you could tell like the atmosphere in the back, and everybody was so down. Like everybody was just like demoralized after what happened with Eddie. And I was there, and I was there for a tryout, and it was just a nervous day. You know what I mean? Like the whole thing. I met Finlay, who to me at the beginning was one of the most intimidating lads I've ever met.
For sure,
you
right?
You know what I mean? Yeah. You get to know Fit, greatest guy in the world, but like it takes a while to earn his trust.
And being a fellow Irishman, did that help at all, or did it hinder?
I think it hindered.
Was he harder on you because of it?
I think so, because I felt that because he's Irish too. I felt there was a deal there where I'd have to really prove myself to him. You know, when you hear like second generation superstars like you know, obviously Ted DiBiase Jr. and Harry Smith, and you know, these guys, like it's like you know, the Samoans, like they have to work harder because they're, you know. I felt kind of the same way with Fit, because like obviously, you know, he's created such a great legacy, you know, and from being Irish and being one of the, to me, he's one of the greatest superstars ever. I felt like I gotta prove, I really, really have to go beyond here to prove.
And the biggest star from Ireland, I'd say, biggest worldwide star, I mean, besides yourself, and then now you got Baylor as well, but at the time you're thinking, especially for my generation, Irish wrestlers, the first guy, Dave Finlay, probably the only guy.
Exactly, and at that time, so no one knew who I was, you know what I mean? I did a couple of indie shows and stuff, and I was wrestling in Ireland all right, but like I kind of branched into England a little bit, but not in the mainstream England, like the IPW shows and all that, the very kind of like internet.
Yeah, sure, shows. The big ones, right.
But anyway, so I went in, I got in the ring. Of all people, I had a tryout with Dolph Ziggler, Nick Nemeth.
No kidding?
Yeah, he's just been on the road. match was a disaster.
Really? You and Dolph had a disaster match?
Dolph had only been in the ring, like, I think Dolph had only been wrestling about 3 months, and he was brought up as a caddy for Chavo, right?
Chavo, yeah.
So I still talk to Ziggler about it, you know, we still laugh about it, but, like, it was so, Ricky Steamboat and Finlay are on the outside. Ricky Steamboat's, like, talking about Jack Daniels, his favorite Jack Daniels drinks, the Torrey Wilson. So I'm in there and all, that's all I'm hearing in the back of your head.
He's hitting on Torrey, not even watching your match.
Yeah, he's just trying to smooth and be charming. And then it wasn't good, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but great thing about Fit was he gave me advice. He talked to me and he said stuff to work on. He told me to talk to Brian Dixon, which I did. And then I went over to, I was working. I made a decision that when I finished work on Friday, I would fly over to Dixon every after work on Friday. I'd do two shows in All-Star Wrestling, and then I'd come back. I'd fly back next, sleep in the airport on Sunday night, and then.
So you're talking about you would work your job and get off Friday afternoon,
go straight to the airport,
fly to England,
Liverpool, yeah.
Wow, on Ryanair.
Ryanair,
worst airline
ever.
Ryanair, actually, a couple things you can back me up on this. They charge, well, now they do. They charge you to go to the bathroom. You have to pay a pound to go to the bathroom. It's a little block.
Is that for real now?
They do now. And they also sell standing up tickets. Did they do that back then? You stand up against the wall and they put a seatbelt, like a cross seatbelt, and you can stand up.
Oh, my God. The worst airline ever.
So you'd go to Ryanair, fly over to England, do your Friday, Saturday, Sunday show or whatever, and fly back for work.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'd stay in the airport that night, and then I'd fly next morning.
Who paid your trans?
I paid it.
Okay.
So I'd gone as far as I could in Irish whip wrestling, really. You know, the guys I was wrestling, they were, in there with, they weren't at the same level or less than me. So I knew I had to go get in there with Brookside and James Mason and all these guys and just try and perform at a much higher level, mm-hmm. and learn, because I was pretty much learning on the fly. So yeah, I made that decision, you know, and then on the holiday, the vacation time I had, like the lads were going to Greece or they're going to Spain. I was going to All-Star for 2 weeks at a time.
All-Star Wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. All-Star Wrestling with Dixon. But yeah, I was paying my own trans over. But as far as that,
it's a very similar story to Barrett. He was doing kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
You know? So what were you going to say about Ryanair, though?
He's at the flight, though. He's at the
train. Yeah, he just said he's getting his train. Yeah, lazy punk.
Jammy bastard.
So what you say as far as Ryanair?
Yeah, as far as Ryanair go, I remember they were just the worst. Like,
but terrible.
The cheapest flight, so when you're not making real money, it's definitely.
You know what else they would do, too, is because we've flown there a couple of times with Fozzie from place to place, is you'd have your carry-on bag and you'd bring it up to the gate, and then they'd have this little tiny, like, fit your carry-on into this little tiny box, so you have to check it, and then they'd charge you, like, you know, 40 pounds or 50 pounds. But at that point, you've come too far to go back and check it, so you have to pay.
It's a sham, man. It's a sham. It's a business. And they're all in with it with the airports, especially the smaller ones like Stansted, and there's another one as well.
Those are Irish airports?
No, in England.
Oh, in England. Oh, Stansted. Yeah, absolutely. Stansted. Absolutely.
What's the other one? There's two. Gatwick and Stansted are the two kind of independent airports. But I remember that happened to me one time as well. I was so fed up. I was in this movie called The Escapist with Brian Cox and Joe Fiennes. And I just moved to England when I got this role for this two-ton movie in The Escapist. And I was like, this is great. But then I ended up literally getting to England. And then like in December, the end of December and the beginning of January, literally flying back and forth the whole time. And Ryanair was what I was using. And I remember one time I was so determined to, like, not to give them any more money, that I was going through and I had my carry-on bag and I had like kind of some of my wrestling gear in there. And they the same thing, like, oh, it's over by 2 pounds, right? So I had this like cloak I used to wear, like with the cross. I was like, yeah, really? I took all the gear out. I put my gear on. I put the cloak on and I just walked through. And as soon as I got through the other side, I just put it all back in the bag. I was like, they're not getting any more of me bleeding money.
That's right. And the seats don't recline either. They're molded plastic seats.
Totally.
So to the fine people at Ryan Airlines, if you're listening, we don't like you. There you go.
They're brutal, man.
So you're talking about, I mean, you're talking about how you were going back and forth and all that sort of thing. How did you finally get hooked up in the WWE after your horrible Dolph Ziggler tryout?
So it was really bad. So, but it made me determined. Like, it was funny. I talked to Dolph about that when we had the world title match in 2012. Like, I was saying how funny it was. Like, years ago, we had this terrible tryout match in Dublin, and now, like, here we were. I'm trying to remember where we were.
World title match, kiss my ass match. You guys were working quite a bit.
Yeah. So it was, you know, an interesting time. Like, I mean, I had to get to All-Star, and the more I wrestled, the more confidence I got in what I was doing, and the more pointers I got.
You're all obviously too, like, and I keep using Barrett as an example, and Drew as well, because you guys kind of came up together. Because all three of you guys are naturally big guys. So on the independent scene or the European scene, when you're coming up, I'm sure there's a lot. It's just like here, there's a lot of smaller guys. A guy like you comes in the door, you're going to get more chances just because of your size. That's just the bottom line of wrestling. So I'm sure you're getting lots of gigs just because of that. Just having you on the card is an asset.
That was kind of a weird situation because definitely, like, I was, you know, we were a lot bigger than a lot of the guys on the independent scene. Mm-hmm. And, like, I made sure that, you know, I tried to get to the gym as much as I possibly could. But the thing was, especially in England, it was a huge thing, influx for, like, I remember I had a couple of, the first Irish Whip wrestling match, and I remember someone talking to me about, oh, like, there must have been about 20 people at the show, right? Mm-hmm. It was in the gym hall. And I remember Joe Cabre going to me, oh, man, they slated us on the internet. And I'm like, What are you talking about, Joe?
They slated you?
Slated the show.
Oh, like, it's like, talked bad about it?
Yeah, but I'm like, who, what are you talking about? He goes, oh, it's on the internet, man, the boards. I was like, something called boards.ie. And I was like, who was slating it? What are you talking about? There was 20 people at this show. Yeah. And he's like, oh, are you talking about the 20 people at this show? They're online. Like,
there's a riot between the 20 people.
And
yeah.
It's just like, I didn't understand. Like, I wouldn't understand how, like, and like, even then, like these guys were just like, they're so concerned about what, like, 15 or 20 people were saying
about them.
You know what I mean? I was like, I didn't get it. So in England, there was a lot of buzz about these smaller guys like Johnny Storm and Jody Fleisch and all these kind of small kind of guys. So a lot of promoters weren't really they were using a lot of TNA guys too and the former WWE guys, but they weren't really concerned about, like, your size or stuff. They just wanted to try and get those internet smart wrestling fans in.
Into the building.
Yeah, and by using these small high flyers and you know what I mean? These kind of like spot wrestlers and stuff. So I didn't really, like, so that kind of the doors didn't fly open.
Gotcha. Because you didn't have really much of a name value.
No.
Right.
And for All-Star, Dixon was the opposite. Dixon wanted guys who were bigger and who looked the part. That's why when I went to Dixon, it was a kind of a shoe-in for me, you know.
Gotcha.
But I remember I met Wade. I was over in Wales doing a show. I'd already met Drew. Drew had come in from British Championship Wrestling. And to me, like, even then, as a young kid, he was really tall. And we had our first match, literally, like, we had a couple of minutes before we did it. And we hit it off in the ring, And we just became great friends. You know what I mean? We had good personalities. Words that matched together. Had a good laugh. Shared the same stuff. You know, so we had a good banter and a good talk, and just became good mates or great mates. And Wade, I saw Wade at Celtic, and I saw Wade for the first time. Now, if you know what I'm talking about, like, you see all these guys, and they're about 4 foot tall or whatever, and all they're gonna do is high flying and stuff, and the spandex is hanging off them, which I've never actually, I didn't even know that was possible. So these lads, like, spandex is hanging off their bodies.
It's baggy just, spandex.
It doesn't make it. When you see that, you know, you're just like, yeah. you got no chance.
Yeah.
But I saw Wade, I was like, holy shit. I was like, the size of Wade, he was just huge. He was
his really presence.
Tall, yeah. And it just blew me away. So I was like, man, I told Simon, we need to get this guy for Irish Whip Wrestling, and he can be a great, great heel, you know what I mean? And we talked to him, we brought him in, and we did some shows, and then me, him and Drew got on, we did All-Star shows together.
So the three of you guys kind of stuck together?
Yeah, a little bit. Whenever we were on the shows, we did, and then we did the tryouts together as well. So we did the first tryout, I think it's November in Manchester in 2006, basically, they stuck us in a broom closet.
That was where you're changing?
Yeah, the broom closet. Me and Wade, every time we passed it, we're in Manchester, we normally go to the broom closet just to remember. It's a clean broom closet. Like, just share, you're in there. We didn't even have a dress room. We didn't even have, like, there wasn't even the curtain off area. It was a bleeding broom closet.
Did they stick a couple chairs in there or something?
I don't even know if it was chairs. No, just get in there, will you? Get out of the way. And there was a guy there, Pierre Marceau, Mikel, he's the French guy now, and in NXT, he's gonna kill
Sylvester LaFort.
No, the other guy.
Oh, okay, I don't know the other guy.
He's gonna kill me now. His name.
We'll edit it in later.
Okay, let's edit it in. He was on this buzz, right? He was on this massive buzz, like, because he thought, like, he was getting big, he was training hard. So it was hilarious because, like, he came in, he was like, I'm bigger than most of these WWE superstars, you know? And I'm like, Mikel, Pierre, just relax there, will you? So he goes off and he's like walking around with the you know what I mean, with the barrels under the arms. He's walking around the whole, we're watching him. Me, Ray, Drew, Wade, a couple of other guys watching him go off in the corridor. I don't know if you know the backstage in Manchester, but you go up and then you go around. You can do a whole, like, loop.
Yeah.
So he goes off all confident, right? And then he goes back 10 minutes later, opens the door, all depressed, head down. I said, what's wrong with you? You all right? And he goes, I don't understand. Everyone here is bigger than me.
But that's what happens. That happened to a lot of guys. I remember a friend of mine, his name was Rick Titan, and he started in Calgary. We were in Japan together. He was 6'8". You know, he was bigger than everybody. As soon as he came to the WWE, he's just another guy.
Yeah.
Because you had guys like the Hog Farm, was Pig and Hog, Tech Slot. You know, those guys are Billy Gunn.
Godwin's, right? Billy Gunn.
Like, Billy Gunn, deceptively huge.
Unbelievable.
Right? So when you guys came to the WWE, was it kind of the same thing where you're walking around going, like, we're basically just kind of above average here now?
Well, yeah, you had Kali, you had Big Show, you had Snitsky, you had
a guy like Kane, you never think about. He's massive.
Yeah.
You know, Taker, massive. You know, all these
Santino,
guys.
Santino.
Test at
Santino's
the time.
A giant.
Santino. Big George.
Big George.
We always laugh because Santino knows, like, every size of George. Oh, my friend Little George. My friend Big George, my friend medium-sized George.
He knows about 17,000 Georges.
Yeah. How many
George Georges pick you up? I was like, which George is that? Everybody, you shout George in the airport and everybody turns around and looks at you. Well, yeah. Oh, man, yeah.
So you get there and you're just kind of blending into the scenery now with the size of those guys. But you guys, I think I remember this from either Drew's, when Drew was on. Actually, both Drew and Wade have been on this show and both of them said, hey, let us know when Sheamus comes on. We want to make sure we did better ratings than he does. Damn. So we'll see. All right. We're continuing the amazing conversation with Sheamus. So you, Wade Barrett, and Drew McIntyre all tried out for WWE together and kind of got signed on the same day. Is that correct?
We got signed exactly the same day.
That's insane.
Yeah. So we did a tryout at Manchester. John Laurinaitis wasn't there, so we didn't realize, like, that he had to be there to get signed and stuff. But we got a lot of feedback from Fit and everything. It was pretty intense. I remember Regal being like, oh my God, I've never, like, the whole idea of, like, finding big guys, but he said, so many big guys together. So I flew myself to Milan because I was told by Mike Bucci that there was no room for me in London. So,
no room for you to have a tryout?
Yeah, no room. So I flew myself to Milan on Ryanair. And
we should get a sponsorship for Ryanair.
I think they owe me money, actually.
They do, yeah. Me too.
Bastards. But I flew myself down there and I had a dark match with Jimmy Wang Yang. Got knocked out and I think it was like the first minute with a spin kick. Didn't put my hand up. Remember that spin kick you used to do?
Yeah.
I don't really remember much after the match. But
how apropos that you got knocked loopy with a kick.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Brogue Kid.
I'll be honest. I'm honest with you. I've never seen a spin kick come as fast like that from
Yeah, I agree. Like, I remember that one.
Yeah, I mean, he just came so fast. And all I remember was my head shooting back. And I just remember looking, oh, wow. Look at all those people up there. That's cool. What's happening right now?
You don't even realize it at the time. That's the thing. When you get knocked out in the ring, I got knocked out once. And my partner was in Japan, was tapping my ankle to try and wake me up, and I just remember, like, it felt like I had, like, a 2 mile long leg, and at the very end of this mile long leg he's tapping it, like, it felt so far away. Wow. Like, wow, I have a long leg. And you kind of wake up and it's like, and then it comes into view again. Yeah.
Were you able to remember though, like,
I remember it afterwards, good. Yeah, but it felt almost like if you pass out after having a few too many cocktails and you wake up and you kind of take a few minutes to kind of remember, what did I do? And then it kind of slowly comes back, but it takes a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I did the same thing happened to me in the Elimination Chamber when I was in that match with WWE champ. I went in, I don't know what it was. I took one thing pretty snappy to the, and pretty quick to the head, and then I banged my head off the steel grate and the chamber. And all I remember is like looking up, and I'm by the post, I'm by one of the chambers. I remember looking up and like, oh, what is going on? Like,
yeah,
it's like that. I used to have a dream or a nightmare where you like. You start wrestling, but then you wake up and then you're like it's 5 years time and you don't know everything in between that time is just
what happened. Yeah, like you're in a coma or something, right?
What am I doing? So I just remember looking up and Scott Armstrong is right there going, Seamus, you all right? I was like, what? I was like,
yeah.
And then but then you get frustrated because you're trying to remember what's happening and what's coming and you can because it's not coming to you, you start getting frustrated and tense.
Start getting panicky.
Yeah. But I did the dark match. Jimmy knocked me out. That spin kick, I'd never taken anything like that before. It was so fast. And I remember I finished the match, kind of got through it. Don't remember anything about it.
Not having a lot of luck on your tryouts.
Not really, right? Pretty bad luck, actually. But yeah, John has come to London. So I went to London. I met Drew and Wade there. We had a lot of hot matches. Drew and Wade got in the ring, and Drew was so like tensed up. That Drew knocked out one of Wade's teeth. Did he tell you that story? Yeah. Yeah. Wade had to go to the hospital.
And then come back the day after that for another tryout or whatever it was.
Yeah, we had to finish the tryout the next day.
Yeah.
I wrestled as well. So it was good though. John Arnaz came to us. I was the last person he came to, but he went to Drew, went to Wade, offered him deals.
Are you thinking? Like, okay, those guys got deals. There's no way I'm going to get one. Or were you like, did you even know what was going on?
Well, I had a friend of mine, Ray Senior, there, who's there, you know, and he's helped me with a lot of stuff over the years. I mean, he's great. Like as I said, like Kim and Drew would be my best mates, and Ray is just like he's solid, you know. He's got some great ideas, and like when I first met Ray, I shaved a head, and I was wearing fake tanner, and you know, I just didn't look anything like I look now, and I was trying to be like everybody else, and Ray just snapped me out of it, and then
what did he tell you?
He just said that you got the most. You got the most naturally unique look that you could possibly want, and you know, to stand out from everybody else, you're trying to be like everybody else. And we talked about it. We shared our same interest in Celtic mythology and creating a character that would be just taken seriously rather than something that's going to be like hokey.
Just hold on for a second. You said Celtic mythology.
Yeah.
So are you talking about, you know, rather than being the typical Irishman dressed up as a leprechaun?
Darby O'Gill and all
Darby
that.
Darby or like a drunken pub singing, we drink and we fight and we drink and we fight and we fight and we drink and we fight.
It's a Family Guy.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's the thing, you always have had like this, your like the kind of the white skin, which nobody in wrestling has.
Exactly.
Like you want to be tan. Like I don't even know if you could get a tan if you wanted to.
No, I've tried, Mace. Yeah. I've tried, and it hasn't ended well.
It hasn't ended well.
But I was weren't sure what would Vince do. God, some guy with no tan, you know. But it worked out great because it just came. My natural look, you know, just gave a completely different look.
The reason what you were thinking is the reason why he liked it, because no one else has that.
Exactly.
Right.
And Ray's been great. Like, Ray's designs some gear for me before, has designs gear for me. And, you know, we talk all the time. And, you know, he's great just to talk to and vent and run ideas by.
Are you talking about, like, you're talking about gear and some symbolism, like the Celtic gear, cross you have?
Yeah, we run it by each other. And we, like, he's great, you know, like, it's... He's outside the business, and he's got a very creative mind, and we bounce stuff off each other all the time, you know.
Where did you come up with the name of Seamus?
Seamus was just it was an Irish name.
Very Irish,
Irish, and I just thought that would suit the WWE.
Because originally it was Seamus O'Shaughnessy, right?
Seamus O'Shaughnessy.
Yeah.
Vince likes the one names.
He does.
Neville now is... Adrian Neville is now Neville.
Cesaro,
exactly.
Batista. Yeah, you have a tendency to lose...
Christian. Yeah.
You have a tendency to lose your first name when you come, or your last when you come to the WWE.
Yeah. I can see what he thought. I think he's probably a little bit gimmicky, Seamus O'Shaughnessy, but the SOS was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But Like, you know, we were all there, and I guess Johnny asked me, who is he? I says, he's, you know, my manager, you know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like, he goes, so he kicked him out of the building.
Ray?
Yeah, he kicked Ray out of the building, yeah. And
sorry, buddy.
So I thought basically Johnny was like, oh, I'm not hiring this guy because he's a manager, you know what I mean? So I was just like, look, I can't. He walked up to me, he goes, who's this manager guy? I says, it's me, mate, you know, it's Ray. You know? And he's like, oh, why do you have a manager? I says, like, you know, we work together, we talk together, we're like, we're mates, you know what I mean? We're like, we have a lot of great ideas together. And he's he just was like, all right, well, giving you an offer a contract, this is the deal. So he gave it to me. So that was it. I handed my notice the next day. Bucci was awful trying to get in touch with. Like, he was just like, I don't even know.
Because he was like, for some reason, the head of talent relations or something like this?
It was like kind of in the Mark Carano position at the time.
Gotcha.
And he just like, or was he? I don't know if he was.
Something along those lines.
Or a Ty Bailey role, right? He was a Ty Bailey role.
Yeah, he's kind of in talent, whatever you would call that, talent development or whatever it may be.
But he was brutal. Like, I'd be emailing him and stuff, ask him stuff, he'd just never respond, or he just he's the worst ever. I was like, wow, they even want me coming over here, you know?
And Mike Bucci would be a supernova, or Nova was his name in ECW.
Simon Dean,
that's right. Yeah, exactly. So how was it for you when you first came over to the WWE, you know, from working kind of the indies in Europe, and then now you're over in the States, and I mean, what was the transition like just from a culture standpoint?
It was crazy. Like, I remember landing in Tampa, Florida, and it came in September, and I got off the plane and I nearly had a bleeding heart attack. It was like, it was must have been like nearly 90 degrees outside or more, and I remember the heat hit me. I'm like, gee, I'm bleeding snowman walking into the desert here, you know. It was like crazy. I got picked up by a guy called Steve Madison, another guy. I was just like, I really had no information when I landed what was going to happen. So I landed, I got picked up, and I got brought to this Joe Gomez's house. One of Joe Gomez, yeah, everyone in Tampa
always comes back to Joe Gomez. Yeah, yeah. He takes care of all the boys.
Yeah, so they didn't have a bedroom for me, so I slept on a what do you call those things? You know those?
A cot?
No. It was like, you know, ones you wear, the sun lounger. I slept on a bleeding sun lounger that would collapse about four times a night.
Why? Did you not have a, like, you wouldn't?
No bed.
They didn't give you a place to live or hook you up or anything like that?
They put me in Joe Gomez's gaff, and all the rooms, a couple of Tommy Taylor and Chris Gray and Hayd Vance were in there. There was no beds, so I was literally sleeping on a
So the WWE lounger brings you over and just sends you to Joe Gomez's house? Yeah. Were they paying him a fees like foster children or something?
I think it was through FCW that was done. So I was like, screw this. So I kind of became buddies with Ted DiBiase in the first week. So I moved in with Ted, and then we just got a place which is closer to downtown Tampa. So that was grand. I got out of Brandon as well to me, because I wanted to join myself too, and I was close to everything downtown. Wait, yeah. Tampa. Brandon's in the States.
Nothing. Yeah, that's like living in Cork.
Yeah, it's worse than living in Cork, mate. Like living in Tipperary.
Tipperary. So how long was it from when you came into WWE until you became the world champion? Because it was fairly early on in your run, within a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I went. So, you know, when you're in FCW, you don't know when you're going to come up or what's going to happen. And then they just got a call to go up on the road a couple of times. I went up and had a few dark matches. One I had against Truth. And then out of the blue, after Mania in 25, WrestleMania 25, they put me on the road. So they're going to go on the road. So I was on the road on my own. Straight away, obviously because of Marlon, I had that, like, and Regal was there. I started talking to Regal a lot. And we hooked up, and Regal just, you know, I got Regal to ride with me and helped me with my matches.
Hooked up with Regal on the road.
And Scott Armstrong, too, jumped in as well. And, like, basically, you know, Regal was watching my matches and, you know, and critiquing me. And we talk about stuff on the drives, anywhere between, you know, yourself, 3-hour drives, 2-hour drives, and 5-hour drives. And it was really great. It was like having this like wealth of knowledge and experience like beside me. When he didn't have his neck pillow and his eye
his eye mask,
and then put the chair back, he was great when he wasn't sleeping. But
That's kind of a lost thing though now, like, because there's not as many veterans to be able to, like, my first riding partner when I got to WCW, along with five other guys, but Arn was in there when he was still working.
Arn, yeah.
You know, and like you said, when he wasn't, you know, angry or, you know, trying to find a White Castle or mad because he didn't get a ice cream sundae,
you just sit there and listen to him talk and learn so many things, both good and bad. Yeah. You know, I think that really helps you develop when you're a younger guy coming into the business.
I couldn't agree more. Like, I could not agree more. You need that. And, like, regarding our I've drove at Aaron once or twice. I was either going too fast or I was going too slow. Or, you know, I wasn't changing lanes quick enough.
Damn it, Seamus!
Or I didn't have the fast pass there yet. Yeah, the fast
What's wrong
pass.
With you?
Goddamn! Oh, it was a nightmare. I wanted to I wanted to jump out of a moving car when I drove
end
him.
This now.
Like, just go. Just jump out. Indiana Jones style.
Yeah, exactly.
But Regal was great, yeah. Regal helped me a lot. And, like, you know, he saw that I was passionate about what I wanted to do. And I came on the road and then... And, after a couple of months, you know, I got an opportunity in ECW, a couple of us did.
Mm-hmm.
So swapped everything around. They moved guys from ECW to SmackDown, and I went.
So that was your first on TV appearance? It was the ECW brand?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just before an Australian tour, I believe. But before that, like, Regal, you know, kind of got me introduced to Triple H as well, which at the time apparently got me a lot of heat, because apparently I was kissing Triple H's ass and stuff. But yeah, I was Triple H's workout buddy and stuff like that. It was so funny.
Oh, got you heat with the boys.
Oh yeah,
gotcha.
It was so funny because I didn't know really anybody was on the road a while, and Regal obviously was very good friends with Triple H. So, and they knew how much I wanted to get on. It was like I wasn't just prepared to just turn up. I really wanted to learn. I didn't want this to be something. Like, I've seen so many guys as a fan come and go, and I didn't want that. I knew this is a great opportunity of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was like, I need to absorb as much information and knowledge as I can. And like, Regal was great, and on Triple H again, someone who's like been there, done that, you know. And you know, he helped me out. He'd always come and talk to me about my matches, if you know, and he'd give me his opinion, and it was great. But then when we got to Australia, I was kind of like, I didn't really know any of the guys because I was, you know, we got there again, I was still fairly new, and he said, hey, you know, like, look, it's your first overseas tour, you know, let's go. Me, Show, and Chavo are going to work out. You can come with us, you know. And I was like, cool. So I worked out with him and hung out with him and chatted, and he was, you know, he sussing me out, you know. He was kind of, I guess he was just seeing like where my head was at, and if, you know, because I'm sure so many people come on WWE, they're like, this is my dream, you know, I want to work hard, and you know, I want to be the best, and that they're just words, you know. And I was just, he sussed out, you know, we talked a lot, and you know, I told him what my goals were, and I just wanted to learn, and it was great. We hit it off right away. Of course, a lot of the boys at the time were just saw this as, look at this guy, he's sticking his nose and dripping his ass, he's brown nose, and you know, even you, Chris, like when you were there, when I moved to ECW and you were in SmackDown and ECW, I was looking for, you know, I was looking for advice and talking.
Yeah.
Like, I went to the guys who I thought would help me. Like, I'm not saying, oh, because he's in that position, but it was like, I want to learn, like, what they've done is right. They've taken the right steps.
And what's wrong with that, right?
Exactly, right?
You know?
I'd love people to come and ask me, you know, I like when they do and ask me. It's great because I love, like, sharing my experiences and what I did that was wrong and then what it was right. And I've made a lot of mistakes. And my main thing, though, was to avoid a lot of mistakes that guys have made, and that's what you told me, and Triple H.
Remember the one time?
The hair?
Was it the hair? Do you think the hair?
It was the hair, yeah.
Your hair was sticking straight up.
7 foot tall, yeah.
And what did I say to you?
He said, yeah, I like your look, you know, it's great, you know, your intensity knob. He said, your hair, you know, it's, how do I say this without insulting you? You were like, it's really long. There's a point when it looks cool, but there's a point when it just goes beyond that. It looks a little bit...
Like the heat,
pokey.
The heat miser. Because I mean, you had it, you cut it down, but you had it really sticking straight up.
Straight up.
And then I remember another time too. I think it was when you first came in or close to it. You power bombed somebody on the floor.
Jamie,
and I was like, and it was really intense. And it was really good, but I was like, you got it because you slammed him down. I was like, you got to take care of the guys that are giving you your body because I know you're super excited. But I remember telling, because you know why I did that, because it's like. He asked me to come and give him advice if I ever saw anything. And this is something that, you know, I saw. So that's good to have those people to give you that advice, you know?
No, I remember that well, Chris. I remember the advice, and it's been great, you know? And as I said, like, from opinions of people who've done everything, you know what I mean? For me, it was just to learn from you guys and try and apply that. I do remember, though, like, the first match I had with Jamie the week before, because I moved from ECW to Raw, and I didn't even realize that the significance of that, of like a lot of people watch Raw and never even watch ECW. So right. I was coming into this show and I was like, it was like starting again.
Yeah,
like
sure.
ECW, but like, no, you're starting all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first match, it just, we thought we did well. And then it was just, there was a lot of negative stuff that came from above. And then, so I had to do it again. And I was just like, wow, this is not, like, I need to make sure we do this right.
But you had to redo the match?
Yeah, we did. Or, we had a like rematch.
A rematch, gotcha.
Week, yeah. And Jamie was amazing. To me, Jamie was such a great help.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, well. Man. Absolutely.
Even watched him the other night on Raw. I don't know if you watch him now with the Authority.
Yeah.
He just goes in. He hides behind.
He's like, great.
He's an amazing character.
When Sean and HBK and I had our feud in 2008 and 9, like the classic Jericho Michaels, he was our agent, our producer, and every night we requested him because he's so smart with just little details. Like you mentioned, hiding, you know, try this little hold here. It's a very, very, very good behind-the-scenes talent, you know?
Jamie's great. He really is. You know, I've learned a lot from him, and just as a character, watching him, he knows who Jamie Noble is, the character.
That's right.
And stuff with Kane, and when he's in the stuff with Nidia and all he's just a great, great character. Like little things like that, like you wouldn't have to tell him, but like just the other night, he just goes in and hides behind. I think it was Triple H he hid behind.
Yeah, total straight face.
But yeah, so that was the deal. So all of a sudden then, right, we go in, I move to Raw. I get on a roll. I win this breakthrough battle royal again, you know, and all of a sudden then I'm in a TLC of 2009 against John Cena, which before that I'm thinking like, there's no way I'm walking away here with the title. You know what I mean?
It was a championship TLC match.
Match. It's a tables match with Cena. And we had a huge build up to that. I was in there with Mark Cuban, who I'd never even heard of.
He's just this billionaire guy from down the road.
I had no idea about basketball and everything. But I do remember before in ECW, I remember I had a feud with Shelton Benjamin, and I had no problems with Shelton. I thought Shelton's an amazing athlete.
Mm-hmm.
He can do stuff that's incredible. But I don't know what it was. We're doing these matches, and every time we were sitting down, he was calling me rookie. Okay, the rookie.
Really?
Yeah. He's just like, I don't know what it was. It was just weird. It was weird. So. And I'd never been anyone nice to him, you know, and I was just trying to make this feud really good because I come out with an awesome feud with Goldust. Now, that's really what put me on the map because Goldie and me, like, from day one, mate. Goldie.
He's so effing good.
He's amazing. Like,
Goldust. So, so good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, he was one of the best feuds I had at the right time. Like, he was there for me for everything. Like, even he says to me, like, I brought a lot out of him that, you know, he hadn't seen him in himself in a while. And we got stuck into each other. We baked lumps out of each other. And it was great, you know, we both felt it. So I come out of that feud. I was kind of, went into this Shelton Benjamin feud. And then there was the thing with Raw was happening kind of simultaneously. But I remember Shelton was like, oh, rookie this, rookie that. And I was like, you know what I mean? I was I wasn't a kid. And I was a little bit disappointed by it, you know.
You might have even had more experience years-wise than him. To be honest with you.
In WWE?
Years in the ring.
Oh, years in the ring, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he might, I really think he had a few more years than me,
but it's not that much difference.
No.
You know, maybe 12
it's
to 10
like
or something.
You or Sean Taker, you know what I mean? So I was just, you know, a little disappointed by that. And then we went in and then we had the feud and we finished it. And then we finished the ECW thing, which was kind of going on at the same time as Raw, as I was merging into Raw. And then I hadn't seen him for a while, you know, and it really, actually really annoyed me. Like, but as I said, like, I was going to say professional about it. And I don't have anything against Shelton. I still think he's great athlete. But I remember TLC after beat John Cena, I'm there standing there with the WWE Championship. And I was thinking to myself, who's the bleeding rookie now, mate? I was so funny, Chris. I walked backstage with that title, mate. I walked backstage and it was like a ghost town. I was so many people pissed off. It was brilliant. And the thing for me was, I wasn't a 21-year-old kid, mate. I've been around the block. I've dealt with a lot of experiences. I've dealt with a lot of people. And as I said, it was just a great feeling.
Like, but see, you need to know that. Like, I always kept an eye on what's going on. You can say, like, it's not reading the dirt sheets, but it's keeping an eye on who's out there. So I knew when you came in, and Barrett, and even now with, you know, a guy like Neville or Finn or Itami or Kevin Owens, like, these guys have been working for a long time and at the top level. And I don't care if you're the main event of Irish Whip Wrestling or the main event of WrestleMania. The concept is the same. You still have to know how to get over.
Yeah.
Daniel Bryan, I knew he would get over the moment he came in here because he'd been over everywhere else.
Yeah.
If you don't know that, that's on you. Yeah. And for someone to be like, hey, rookie, whoever's saying it, it's just stupid. It's not smart, you know?
Yeah, I didn't understand. I mean, I talked to Hurricane about it, like, but you see, the thing was, like, I was like, okay, that's fair enough. Like, whatever mm-hmm. opinion is. And you know what, like, to me, it's all water under the bridge. I've met him since, you know.
Oh, sure. I'm just saying, in general, like the ghost town of people being angry that Sheamus won, or angry Edge won, or angry that Jericho won. You know, I've been through too. I was the undisputed champion, and people were pissed. Dude, I've been in the business for 12 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Come on. Take it easy here.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I didn't give a damn. Like, mm-hmm. to me, it's like I'm standing there with the WWE Championship. Drew McIntyre was there. Ted DiBiase was there. Because it was halfway through the show. But, like, to me, it was great. You know, I couldn't believe it. Like, it was just, I was standing there with the WWE Championship. It was just an incredible experience.
All your dreams that you had thought about.
Like, just like that, so fast. And, I mean, it was just funny. Like, it just... all this had come so fast, and there was people there obviously for years who never even had a championship match, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing.
Well, but the thing is too, I mean, okay, you have this unique look, and one of the things I always liked when we worked, and we haven't worked a lot, but we always had really good matches.
Every time, yeah.
You do work strong style. And there's a difference between being stiff and working strong.
Yeah.
Stiff is dangerous. Stiff is knocking people out, cutting people open. That happens once in a while, but not often, you know, if in the course of a match. But working with you is like, you gotta be, it's like you feel it, and it makes you more into it, and it gets the crowd into it more. It's a great style.
To me, I've never been one for being a high flyer. I've never been one to be able to, like, I'm not the most acrobatic. I'm not the most technical. I'll be honest about that.
Not the best looking.
Not the best. Definitely not the best looking. But I'll do tell you this, though. I do pride myself in bringing a really hard style to WWE. And I've taken making the best of my opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Always bringing them up to the level. Like, mm-hmm. I always, like, try and spark something in them. And that's what pride on, like, everything I do means something. And I want people, when they watch my match, to be able, like I don't know, those other matches, like, there's a lot of, like, moving around, but man, that Sheamus guy, I don't want to be hit by him, you know. And it goes both ways too. It's like, for the opponent as well, it just brings them something out, because this is the level we're going at. Either, you know, you can keep up, or you can fold over.
Yeah.
And most of the time, pretty much most of the time, everyone steps up. And now, like, especially me in a different role now, I'm loving it, because, like, I get to get in there with the baby faces and get to go toe-to-toe with them. Like, I could bring them up, what I want to be brought out of me as a baby face. Most times a baby face was in there with smaller guys than me, and some of the time very less aggressive than me. So when you're, like, the baby face and stuff, and you're, like, beating lumps out of the so-called bad guy or the heel, whatever, it just, you know, it's very hard to get, like, sympathy, or, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean. So I really felt misplaced for a long time in that situation.
You feel misplaced as a baby face in
a
way?
I kind of did at the end, yeah. I mean, certain opponents, obviously, I'd be in there where we have great matches, like Brian, because I knew Brian would always, like, even Brian as a heel was amazing, like a heel or baby face, but he was just so aggressive. Cesaro, you know, these opponents that were in there, Barrett, like, you mm-hmm. know, these guys that were in there with, but then, you know, you get away from that, and then there's a lot of opponents that, like, they just, you know, they're just not aggressive, so it's hard to...
Right.
So now, in my role, I'm just loving it, because now, you know, obviously going with Ziggler and Neville and these guys and Daniel Bryan, like, I'm taller than them, I'm bigger than them, and it's just that kind of persona, just like...
bully.
Absolutely, just like, I'm just dragging out them, and the people get behind, like, I can feel the people getting against me and getting behind these opponents and just, like, want them to bait the crap out of me. And just antagonize. I just feel more comfortable, even on the microphone. Everything about it, I just feel at home. Like, the last month, I was telling people, like, I feel like I'm starting again with all the knowledge of the last 5.5 years of being a heel and being a babyface. I feel like I'm starting again. I feel fresh. I feel like it's brand new. And I feel like I feel like nobody can touch me. I feel like I am top of the world and I'm untouchable right now. And this it's all been building this. There's been a lot of frustration over the last while, over the last year or so. When I came back from the last injury, from the shoulder injury, when I went sailing through from the top rope to a ladder, which wasn't very acrobatic. But when I did that, when that happened, I came back. I was like, I was in rehab every day, like working on my shoulder. I was in the gym. I got leaner. I was like, I'm coming back. And I came back. And obviously, Batista came back. Roman Reigns was on that roll. And I just got kind of lost in the shuffle.
Lost in the shuffle, yeah.
You know, and it was just like, to me, it was a start-stop. Even like missing Extreme Rules, winning the US title the next night after, then like doing a pay-per-view, then missing SummerSlam. It felt like you're going.
SummerSlam because you're hurt or because there's just no room for you?
Because the stories, like, changed. Yeah. So I was supposed to go in with Rusev at SummerSlam, and they switched it back to Swagger. And that whole fit as well of Rusev's character, because I knew that me and Rusev could have great matches because of his physicality. Like, that was a heel I wanted to be in there with. Like, that was a heel that was like, listen, this guy's rough, he's good. I mean, you know what I mean? He's physical.
Bigger than you almost.
He's just a mound of muscle and mass, you know. It's like, I can get something, you know, we can have a great match, great chemistry. Like him and Ryback had a match on SmackDown the other night, you know, it's just two big guys going at it, which to me, I really enjoyed that match.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a throwback. But I knew I could get something out of Rusev. But the disconnect was, I'm not merely an American, you know what I mean? He's gone against the American US title. I'm an Irish fella holding the US title.
yeah,
it's just a little bit disconnect. And the way that went and the way the title changed to Rusev as well, you could tell it was like, it's kind of sidestepping the story a bit, you know. Obviously, John and Rusev ultimately going to Cena and Rusev, Mr. America, John, Cena, and Rusev, Mr. Russia, but from Bulgaria. I always slag him off over that.
It's hard too, though. Like, when you've been the champion, have you been the champion three times? Or
I've been a champion three times. So I'll be champion twice, world champion.
So when you've been the world champion, it's always hard to kind of go step back down the ladder again, which is what happens to all of us. So that's a little bit of a confidence effector, if that's a word. So, and especially when you get left off cards because there's no room, it does mess with you mentally.
It does. It really does. Gets frustrating, you know. And the start-stop thing for me was frustrating because it's like you're on the block and you want to go and you stop and you want to go. You want it, like, it's like a race. Like, when you start that car and you hit the accelerator, the car is taking speed and you're going, you're going. It takes, like, that's what it is. It's a build-up. When you go and then you stop and you go and then you stop, it's just like, it's so frustrating because you feel like you're going nowhere.
Yeah.
Where you want to start and you want to go. Like, now I feel like there's nothing in my, nothing's going to stop me in my path. I feel like right now, I feel like this is who Sheamus is. This is who Sheamus is meant to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited about the prospect of all these, like, baby faces. Like, Daniel Bryan, I'd love to get in there with him again. Obviously, Ziggler is a great athlete. You know what I mean? Like, always has great matches. Love getting in there. It's just slapping them around and just firing them up. You know what I mean? Firing them up.
But the people Neville's can feel great. That too, though. Yeah. The people feel that.
Ambrose, Roman, Randy again. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, Cena, like, Brock Lesnar. Oh, that's the one, mate. That's
that'd be a great
me.
Match.
I've heard people talk about that for a long time. But physically wise, especially Brock now with the crowd behind him. The crowd love Brock.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to get in there with him and get stuck in with him.
There's no way it won't happen. Because you guys, I mean, you go in there and punch him in the face as hard as you want to. He's just going to look at you and go, dum, 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 dum.
Yeah.
You know what else I like, too, is when you came back. I told you this the other day. When you came back with the new look, the new hair and the beard, I was like, I like that stuff. Because to me, it shows people this is a different guy. You know, and there's people, you know, people say, you look stupid, whatever. That's good because they're right. Now, it's like when I came back as a heel, I dropped the countdown, put on short trunks, you know, no more catchphrases. Hey, what's the matter with the, why'd you do that, Jericho? We like the countdown. Because I'm letting you know this is real. This is new. Same with you. You come back with this look. It's a new guy.
Yeah.
It's a new character.
It just, it was, to me, it fits everything. Like, I came back last time I did that. There was a song, Pearl Jam, lyrics, I changed by not changing at all. There was a line in there, and that's what we felt last time when I came back. It was like, you know, this is the, you know, brand, you know, this is who people know Sheamus is. And it didn't work, you know, and it didn't happen. I was like, you know what, as soon as I had my hand surgery, shaved the sides of my head, did the mohawk right away, and I was just like, the new demeanor was, I've had enough of this. I've had enough of waiting around. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm fed up of this consistent, like, this you know, the same
cruising.
Thing. Cruising. I don't want to cruise anymore. So I did something drastic, and I hid it for a couple of months too. Like, people take the hat off. I wouldn't have had the beard braided right. I did it as soon as I had that surgery. Did it right away, and then I took it all out, and I kind of kept it, and I just, the whole demeanor, the whole attitude changed, everything about it. Like, I'm not stepping back anymore. The clock keeps ticking, mate. Mm-hmm. Clock keeps ticking, and
new guys are coming in,
and then you just end up staying there. But like, you're right. You've done it so many times. You have to look at yourself and go, look, I can't do this anymore. This is not working. I can't sit back and rest with something that worked 2 or 3 years ago, and it's not working right now. Guess what? Boom. And I walked out there, and when they started chanting, "You look stupid," I just embraced it. I was like, this is what I want. Because I've always talked about reactions. It's not whether they like you or dislike you. It's whether... it's, you know, when you get a reaction. It don't matter if they hate you or not. When there's silence out there, that's when you have a problem. But when they're reacting and they're physically and emotionally involved in everything that you do and the way you look and the way you move and what's happening, it's the best feeling in the world. Yeah. And I knew that this whole attitude which I had been building up inside me and the look, I knew I had to bring that together. And we're only like skimming the surface right
it's
now.
It's the tip of the mohawk
The tip of the mohawk.
Couple last things. There's one thing I wanted to ask you about. How did you feel when you go to WrestleMania 28 against Daniel Bryan? I'm sure you had a match in mind, you know, or at least some ideas. And you get there and you find out it's going to be an 18 second match. How early? Or did you find that out the day of, 2 days before, a week before?
Yeah, it was pretty close to what was happening. We got Aaron Anderson told us about it, what was going to happen.
About when?
About the match.
But when though? Day I'm before?
I remember. No, I think it may be in the week before.
Okay.
So there was a lot going. See, so we obviously had the match at 27 in Atlanta next as well. We were shoe in for a US title match.
Oh.
And then we were on the map for that. And then the week before, Fit Finlay came to us and he said they've decided that it's going to be a lumberjack. It's going to be in the pre-show.
Ooh.
It's going to be a lumberjack, and then it's going to turn into a battle royal. Oh. Three whammies, mate. And we were just devastated. Absolutely devastated.
It's going to be on the pre-show. Oh, and it's going to be a lumberjack match. Oh, and it's going to show the battle royal. It's like, wow.
We try to make the most of it. We were thinking, you know, like me and Brian were thinking, putting together, should we put the match together or whatever for the battle
royal? But mentally, you're pretty devastated, right?
That was the worst ever.
So you're thinking, okay, this year we're going to get our chance to make up for last year.
Yeah. And then it was an 18-second match. I knew the backlash was going to be huge. Mm-hmm. I know our fans.
That's right, because the fans got mad at you for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ever since from that day on, the tide started to turn. And I tell you what, Danny Bryan, man, he embraced it. Yeah, whatever they gave him, he embraced it, and he rose above it, and he just became.
But hey, you can embrace that now too.
Oh,
you know, Mr. 18 seconds. I won the title in 18 seconds. Yeah. No one's ever done that. Here's something you might not know too, and the fans might not know this either. The same WrestleMania, it was me and Punk working for one title, you and Daniel Bryan working for the other. And Vince wanted our match, which had started this blood feud about his father was an alcoholic and all this stuff. He wanted our match to go 8 minutes and ended in a disqualification when Punk wouldn't break in the corner from beating me down. You know, that shite finish. Like, oh, you better stop. You better stop. Ring the bell. And I was like, Vince, you can't do that. Because we had this idea, I'm sure as you did, we want to make this a great wrestling match on the show. And the only reason why he changed his mind was because you guys were going 18 seconds. He didn't want two crappy title matches on the same show.
Hey, so man, my match was amazing. What are you talking about?
It was the best 18-second match I've ever seen. Except for I didn't see it because I think I blinked and I missed it. But that's why. It was like, you know, I can't do one if the other. So the original plan was you guys do 18 seconds, us to end in a double count-out disqualification, 8 minutes. That would have been the worst WrestleMania there.
Well, that was the thing, though, with us. That was the thing, though. Like, the build-up for those matches, whereas there was so much that went into Shawn Taker and Triple H. Then there was... there was obviously you guys. Then there was Cena and The Rock, which almost went nearly an hour. And then there was a couple other things. So like we didn't, and the story wise for our match, we never really got that build up. I won the Rumble, and then it just kind of, you know, and then we had Extreme Rules, and I kind of hit Brian with that with the Celtic Frost, and even the crowd are like, because I had such a great match with Santino, I didn't even want to go out. I was thinking, I don't even want to go out here. Like, mm-hmm. I remember Santino was awesome. It looked like Brian was going to beat Brian for the, you know.
Was that in the Elimination Chamber?
Yeah,
yes.
Elimination Chamber, man.
It was so good.
And I was like, I don't think I want to go out here. You yeah. know what I mean? And I went out there and I hit Brian with the White Noise. And I just, you know, there was a change. You know, it was just a weird thing. Cause it just, like, sometimes your timing can be perfect or not so perfect.
That's right.
And then at Mania, obviously, you know, it was great. I kicked Brian's head off in 18 seconds. A lot of people were upset about it. But I'm sure we're going to meet again. And I'm sure it's going to be another classic feud. Because I remember the two out of three falls we had at Extreme Rules in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Just, great, 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 great match. That was a great show because you guys had that. Then it was me and Punk in a Chicago street fight. And then it was Brock and Cena.
Yeah, me and Brian killed the show, bro. We beat you and Punk.
Well, we actually did a little bit better than you guys. I took a poll. I stood in the crowd and took a poll afterwards. And
you took a what?
I took a poll.
You took a poll?
Yeah, whose match was better? Hello, come over. I set up a table in the back of the arena.
It was biased, though.
Yeah, of course. I just asked my family
members.
They're
all your fans on your Twitter.
Yeah,
Twitter
exactly.
Fans.
People wearing Jericho shirts. Last question.
That was better than Mania. Next
I agree. Year, I agree. That happens quite often too, where the pay per view after is better than the main itself. But last question: if I asked you, what's the favorite match you've ever had? Could you? Like, what pops in your head?
I can't answer because I've had so many that are so. Like,
which ones? A couple that are standout.
The Daniel Bryan Extreme Rules two out of three falls. The Big Show match with Hell in the Cell.
You guys always had good chemistry too.
Me and Show?
Yeah.
Well, he's perfect for me because, like, in that role, like, he was able to throw me around. And
yeah, you can be the hot young baby face with the big giant beating you
what
up,
about
right?
Hot or young? Well, maybe.
You can be the baby face. You can be the small yeah. baby face against
just,
the giant.
Just be realistic here, yeah. mate. Realism. So that I really enjoyed my first Mania match with Triple H 26. That was an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few Morrison in the ladder match. We had some.
We did on SmackDown. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah. SmackDown was really good, and we had a four-way, which I thought was really good too. And four ways are usually kind of hit or miss, but that one everything hit. It was really, really good.
It was good until I hit that White Noise there. And then,
oh, you got in trouble for pinning me with the White Noise. But you had to beat somebody else right afterwards with
the
broad kick.
Yeah. No. I'm just trying to remember that. But
you hit me with the White Noise, you pinned me, and then pinned someone else with the broad kick.
Did I?
Yeah.
I don't remember anything.
I don't remember
anymore.
Whatever.
But as I said, like, you know, the last 5 years to me have just been a warm-up spot. It's funny when you think about, like, you look back at the past, there's Stone Colds and Undertakers, how many years they've been wrestling before they actually get a chance, you know?
Totally, man. But now, absolutely.
But right now, Chris, I feel like this is an exciting time for me, exciting for Sheamus, and like I'm ready to push the boundaries out as far as I can. I'm ready to have as much fun as I can. I beat the crap out of Zack Ryder with a microphone in my hand last week. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And as I said, this Kiss Me Arse match as well. I'm excited about trying to make Dolph Ziggler kiss me arse in front of the entire Chicago crowd, who, let's be honest, I'd like everyone in Chicago to kiss me arse too, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's,
Kisses are Chicago.
We've always had a really love-hate relationship, me and Chicago, so.
Well, they're going to hate it.
I'm excited.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you having me over here, man. And if you ever need someone to do your lawns or something when you're on the road, now I know where you live, so I'll bring my mower over.
Are you good, are you? Is it a pusher? Is it a manual?
Not bad. I'll give you my business card. And call me.
Chris Jericho's Landscaping.
All right, thanks to Sheamus for the hospitality. Had a beautiful house, made a nice cup of coffee, and we had a great conversation. I'm glad he didn't want me to kiss his ass. He's a really big guy, and I wouldn't have had any choice, all right? He's on the tear right now, man, and it's very, very cool to see him. Very cool to see Wade Barrett, who, by the way, is the highest-rated guest in Talk is Jericho history, which is weird, right? Think of some of the guests I've had, but I guess you guys loved him. He's the King of the Ring, and we're excited you can go back and check that episode out anytime you want to. You can also go back and check out the Slash episode, two Slash episodes, which is very apropos because Fozzy and Slash are hitting the road for a mini tour starting May 18th in Chicago. That's right. 21st, Austin, 22, Beaumont, 23, Houston, 24, Dallas. We are going across Texas, man, hitting Chicago. It's a great bill, Fozzie and Slash. Go check it out. All tour dates at FozzieRock.com. There's a lot more up there. We'll get more into those in a few weeks. And then, of course, October 30th, it's the Kiss Cruise, Fozzie and Kiss, going from Miami to Jamaica. Really, really excited about that. Paul Stanley, good friend of mine. We're going to be killing it overseas, on the seas, through the seas. Any way you slice it, man. And I ain't talking about Gene Simmons. And I also want to say, any way you slice it, thank you for supporting Talk is Jericho. I know there's dozens, hundreds, thousands of podcasts to schwaz from. I thank you for schwaz of mine. I'll never let you down, man. Either will all my great advertisers, Pro Flowers, Arctic Ease Instant Cold Wraps, DDP Yoga, MeUndies, and of course, Amazon. Thank you for doing your online shopping through those Amazon links. Every time you do it, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show so I can keep doing it for you for free for twice a week. You know how to find the Amazon links the same way you find them all. Go to podcast1.com. Click on the Supporto Shows banner at the top of the page, UAG. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, USA, Canada, A. Don't forget, you can go shop and buy whatever you want. There's no extra fees, no hidden charges. You're just helping support this show and helping to make me feel good. Feel better after the poopy week that I had. Talking to you guys makes me feel better. Remember, tough times don't last. Tough people do, all right? The only people who tell you can't do something are the ones who have failed. I'm not going to tell you you can't do something because I did it. You can do it too. Be all you can be, man. And I'll see you guys next week. I got actually by an act of happenstance, I was going to interview him anyways. And in the meantime, and in between time, he just happened to be named the Senior Director of Creative in TNA. On next Wednesday, I got Billy Corgan, Smashing Pumpkins main man, and TNA creative main man. He's the reverse Chris Jericho. I went from wrestling into music. He went from music into wrestling. Both of us at the highest, highest level. Billy Corgan will be here on Wednesday. We'll see you then. Yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.